Good afternoon. My name is Samantha. Obviously, we've already been introduced to Graham and Sandy. And today we're presenting on behalf of the Language Landscape team, some of whom are also in the front row here today. Right. So firstly, we'd first like to thank the organisers of the collaborative workshop for inviting us to present here today. So firstly, I will introduce the project and briefly describe its development over the past year before taking you on a brief walkthrough of the website. Then Graham will discuss the technical aspects of the site. After that, Sandy will examine our motivations for the project and briefly discuss how language landscape is different from other kinds of language maps. We will then look at some limitations and challenges that the project may face and consider some potential solutions and other improvements that may be made to the site. We will conclude by stating that the Language Landscape project makes an interesting contribution to language mapping because of our unique focus. Lastly, we'll welcome any comments and questions. Language Landscape is a language mapping website which allows users to access and upload samples of language use. It maps the locations of world languages by mapping recorded samples where they were made. This is an important point and we'll return to it later. The project also has an associated student society at SOAS, University of London, where students meet to discuss the project and related issues. Language Landscape is at once a development of and a break from a previous project entitled London's Language Landscape, which was developed by a group of staff and students at SOAS. This project was exhibited during Endangered Languages Week 2011 and aimed to map the languages spoken at SOAS using an interactive language map. The project maps languages according to the speaker's hometown, place of birth, or location where the language is generally spoken. Through asking the contributors for this information, we began to realise a problem inherent in mapping language data. So, for example, if a Mandarin speaker was from New York, then she could choose to place the marker either in New York, in China, or in London, where she lived at the time. So although this is representative of a certain aspect of the speaker's identity or personal history, it doesn't capture the reality of language use, and also contributors' choices were not consistent across the project. We received positive feedback from the exhibition, with many people asking if we had plans to make the map available online. In response, we applied for and won a grant from the SOAS Alumni and Friends Fund. We use this grant to develop the interactive map as a website to which users can upload recordings and map from where they were made. The resulting site, languagelandscape.org, has been developed over the past 10 months by a team of present and former SOAS students, Graham, who designed and implemented the site, and Nick Ritchie, who helped design the user interface. During this period, we also set up a student society at SOAS to train students in how to make recordings and to discuss issues related to language mapping, multilingualism, and endangered languages. Through the society, we've also held recordathons and promotional events to collect more recordings for the website. The current version of languagelandscape.org was launched during Endangered Languages Week at SOAS in May 2012. Okay. Before we go on to explain our motivations and goals for the project, we'd like to briefly demonstrate some features of the website. So when you arrive on our homepage, what you see is a world map with all of the recordings currently in the database represented by markers. The markers are mapped according to where the location where the recording was made. The recordings are also listed on the left-hand side in order of date of upload to the site, with the latest addition at the top of the list. When you click on a marker on the map, a bubble appears where you can listen to the sample. You can also see the title of the recording, the language, and the contributor's name. Each recording also has a separate page with more detailed metadata. You can access this by either clicking on More inside the bubble or by clicking on the language name in the left-hand list. On this page, you can see further linguistic and contextual annotations such as genre, topic, topic, description, transcriptions and translations. You can also see information relating to the contributor, such as their birthplace and other languages that they speak. As well as browsing the database, it's also possible to query it by language.
One sec.
By language family. You can also query it by country, by projects, and by dates. And you can also query the database by keywords and genres. Recordings are required to be tagged for languages and locations, but users can optionally tag them in a project which has a narrower focus, mapping and documenting only a specific geographical area, for example, or tagging recordings under a unifying genre or theme. For example, we have a project which maps different dialects of Chinese and another which charts the English is spoken around the world. We also have a page with tips on how to make a recording, including a video tutorial featuring yours truly, and instructions on how to get an account with Language Landscape so you can upload your own recordings. So now I'll hand over to Graham, who will discuss some of the technical aspects of the website.
Before you do that, can I just ask you, when you say you can query it by language, I didn't see which web page you were showing us when you said that. Can you just do it? Go to the main page, query it by language, and let's see the result, by English or French or whatever. Can you get back that quickly? Okay.
Yep.
So now you just query it English, right? Right. And that shows you the people who've reported the use of English where they are.
Yes.
So nobody from Australia.
No, not yet.
There's many in this room.
As I'll go into, that search actually takes into account the language, so that's how you can search by language family. So if you search for Indo-European, you know about the tree, so you'll get everything that comes under within that family.
So you can search by family as well. Okay, I just wondered, I didn't see the question and the answer.
So at the moment, the search functionality basically gives you a new map, so it lets you kind of build a map that you want.
Sure.
In the future, we might actually have pages for a language where we'll pull in perhaps things from other resources.
So you can use a hierarchical.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of, not too much detail about how the site works behind the scenes. But so you'll probably recognise that our maps are from Google, as are used by lots of people. It's a very nice API. We also, at the front end, we support automatic clustering of markers. The trouble is that it gets very busy, particularly in London. We've got a lot of recordings from London because it started from that project. And so we have automatic clustering depending on your Zoom level, which you saw as Sandy was clicking through the site. We also have an in-page JavaScript media player to show both audio and video in the page, both in the pop-ups up and on the metadata page. Behind the scenes, I should say that all of the technology we use, and we couldn't do it without it, is open source and freely available, and much of it extremely high quality. Behind the scenes, we use a Python web application server to serve up the pages and do the kind of smart querying of data. The audio and video recordings we store on the web server itself. We also back them up, and then we use a relational database. We use MySQL to track recordings and all the associated metadata that go with that.
Which application server do you use?
Django. So just a few words on the database schema. So we spent a lot of time, actually, this is one of the big efforts in the project, to build a kind of rich schema that will model the relationships between languages, subjects, recordings, and associated metadata. And we did that because that enables you to do this kind of smart querying of the database. So, for example, that lets you, because we model the relationship between languages, we can query all languages in a language tree. Also, as you were seeing, so what it essentially allows you to do is generate arbitrary maps depending on your search criteria. So you can have a map of English, you can have a map of Indo-European, but you can also be much more precise. You can have a map of female Chinese speakers speaking in 2010, and you can kind of build the map yourself. So like I say, it supports these complex compound queries, which at the moment we don't have so much data yet, but as and when we do, we hope that will be really useful for kind of mining this data. So we have in development, not quite public yet, we have a web service API. So as I'll go into, all the content and the code is freely available. And we're developing a web service API, so anyone can pull any of the recordings and any of the metadata and do with it as they wish. Just quickly, that's the schema diagram. I won't go into detail. I'll spare you that. But you can see that so recording is the kind of central object in our schema, and there's a lot of information. But then all this other stuff around it kind of lets us access that information in a kind of rich way. As I said, all the software, it's not yet, because we're still in kind of beta period. I mean, anyone can have it, but it's a bit messy. But it will become freely available under an open source license, so anyone can take it, reuse bits of it, ideally contribute back to us. We're very, very welcome to have bug fixes and stuff. The site content itself will be available under a Creative Commons license. And so as people provide recordings, and eventually when we get kind of the more automated uploading, then we'll have a kind of terms and conditions before you upload stuff that you'll have to accept that the stuff you supply is available under Creative Commons. And so the idea is that other projects are welcome to reuse and extend the system, and contributions both in terms of software and data are very welcome. We're also happy to work with other projects who want to integrate with the site. So we've tried to design it so it's fairly open and readily integratable with other works. That's about all for me, so I'll hand you over to Sandy to go a bit more on the motivation behind the project and comparing it with other language map approaches to language mapping.
So I'd now like to discuss some of our motivations for doing this project. Language Landscape has three interrelated goals: to raise awareness of language issues, to provide a platform for speakers of minority and endangered languages, amongst others, and to experiment with new methods of language mapping. Languages hold an inherent fascination amongst people for their complexity and diversity, but education about language and related issues is often inadequate. Awareness of language as a legitimate area of study and interest is often lacking. By presenting language data in an attractive and accessible format, such as the interactive map, we hope that more people will engage with this area of interest and want to become involved by contributing samples of their language variety. Raising awareness of language diversity may also lead speakers of large dominant languages to understand and appreciate the value and validity of minority languages and non-standard varieties in their community, as well as further afield. Our second aim is to provide a platform for all people, including minority groups, to represent their language and culture. Too often, minority voices are marginalised in the discourses of contemporary societies. Dominant language groups in many countries would like to promote the idea of their language as the only one covering their geopolitical area. Mapping samples of minority languages in such areas will give voice to smaller communities and individuals. This also extends to non-standard varieties of dominant languages. Representing these varieties on an even footing with major languages lends them a legitimacy and expressive power which will help them to survive in the future. Our third aim is to experiment with new methods of language mapping. We like to draw comparisons with existing language maps and show where we differ. Static language maps rely on researchers carrying out surveys of geographical areas and charting the results as polygons, representing areas where the larger languages are generally spoken. While these maps are useful for various purposes, they do not accurately represent language situation for several reasons, which are outlined by Dahl and Selenova. Associated information is kept to a minimum to retain clarity. Language locations are approximate. Languages are misrepresented as discrete entities with clearly delineated boundaries, and they often do not represent smaller languages at all, as you can see in this case. Finally, they are blind to multilingualism in individuals and communities, as they rely on the fallacy that each area demarcated is home to a single homogenous language group. More interactive online maps, which use GIS tools, also differ in their presentation of languages. For example, Google's Endangered Languages project and the UNESCO Atlas of Languages in Danger both map languages as a single marker on their world maps. This focus on a single data point for a language does not represent where the language is actually spoken, though presumably these maps are designed as a way of guiding people through the database, rather than actually charting their location. One project which aims to address this problem is the Language Map Server at the University of Stockholm, which uses data points to map population centres such as towns and villages where the languages are spoken. Language Landscape differs from these maps both in terms of its methods of data collection and in the way it represents the data. We collect data by encouraging people around the world to upload samples to the website. We do not dictate to users what kind of data they should upload, rather allowing them the freedom to contribute whatever they think is important. We ask users to add metadata about a recording, the most important aspect of which is a street address, postcode, or set of coordinates, which allows us to map their sample according to the location where it was made. Data points on language landscape are therefore not languages, so much as instances of language use. Though it is important to note here that recordings added to the site are unlikely to be samples of naturalistic language. More likely, there will be elicited, contrived, or rehearsed. The focus of the map is as much about the content of the recording as the intersection of its location, language variety, and the time of the recording. By mapping samples where they happened, we will chart the dynamics of language diversity, or in other words, where people were and what they spoke then. It may also help us understand patterns of multilingualism, as users can add a recording of multiple languages and also add all the languages they speak to their profile. I'd now like to discuss some of the limitations and problems with the project. The first one is the content. So since we do not say to users what kind of content they can upload, it means that the data might not be particularly useful for linguistic research. Though with a very large data set, the information about the location of the recordings and their time and place may be useful for researchers who want to chart empirical patterns of global language use. The second problem is representativity. The use of user-generated samples to make a language map is untested and will not lead to anything like a representative map of world languages unless a huge quantity of material is collected and mapped. One possible answer to this problem is the existence of the project, which allow users to group together a subset of the recordings in the database as a more conceptually coherent map with a narrow focus. Now we come to more practical problems. Firstly, allowing users the freedom to write into the database may lead to inaccurate or extraneous information. Secondly, the openness and inclusivity of the site leaves it open to abuse. Content needs to be moderated for a range of possible issues, including abusive language, the expression of extreme political, moral, or religious views, personal attacks, libelous content, and I should also add completely unrelated content as well. Our current policy to combat these problems is to monitor every recording that is uploaded. If the recording is deemed to violate any of our principles, it will be removed from the site and the user's account also potentially removed. Given a much larger data set, it may become necessary to implement a flagging system whereby users can flag up offensive or inappropriate content and let us know. I'd now like to just quickly discuss a few of our future plans for the project. The website is currently in the beta testing phase. While it has many useful functions, it also lacks functionality, which we plan to add in future. We can make the site more interactive through comments, forums, and also tighter integration with social media. We can improve the information we hold on languages in the database by allowing users to add information about the language or dialect, building a sort of collaborative Wikipedia-style article. We might also pull this information in from other sources. We can improve our project pages so that users can personalize them, taking their viewers or their audience on this kind of interactive journey through their material in the sense of Woodbury 2011. We can also localize the site by translating it into as many languages as possible. This will attract a wider range of users from around the world. Finally, we can develop a Map Your Language mobile app, which will allow users to access and upload data via their mobile phone. In conclusion, Language Landscape is an attempt to map language data in a new way that reflects the dynamics of language diversity. The project is still in its early stages and we have many challenges ahead. We hope that by broadening participation in the project, we will begin fruitful new collaborations which will help us to achieve our aims. We hope that through these collaborations, our map will become a useful and viable resource on languages and their place in the world. I'd now like to welcome your comments and questions.
Thank you. Wow.